So my sermon today has nothing to do with necessarily leadership or mission per se, but one of our jobs as a member of this church is to preach the gospel. Now, we don't always preach the gospel by our outright words. A lot of times it's our actions. It's the way we behave. It's the way people see us. When we are at the feast, we always hear, "Oh, you guys are just different." And we are different. It's not necessarily what we say. It's just the way we carry ourselves. So the sermon that I had today, I meant to bring a feather pillow with me. So if you would, for a second, just close your eyes. And this will only last 10 seconds, I promise. Close your eyes and picture a big, huge feather pillow up here on the podium. A big, huge feather pillow. Got it? Open your eyes. I'm going to do absolutely nothing with that until the end of the sermon. But I needed that visual, the feather pillow. And again, the feathers is the key. So the name of the title of the sermon is, Can You Pick Up All the Feathers? Can you pick up all the feathers? Now that will make absolutely no sense until we get to the end of the sermon. But it's that visual in the title that hopefully will stay with you as we go into the world at the end of this service. So what I'd like to begin with is just a story. It's actually a poem that has an unknown author. And it goes like this. My name is Gossip. I have no respect for justice. I maim without killing. I break hearts and ruin lives. I am cunning and malicious and gather strength with age. The more I am quoted, the more I am believed. I flourish at every level of society. My victims are helpless. They cannot protect themselves against me because I have no name. I have no face. To track me down is impossible. The harder you try, the more elusive I become. I am nobody's friend. Once I tarnish a reputation, it is never the same. I topple governments and ruin marriages. I ruin careers and cause sleepless nights, heartache, and indigestion. I spawn suspicion and generate grief. I make innocent people cry in their pillows. Even my name hisses. I am called Gossip. So what I'd like to talk about today is the topic of gossip. And I need to thank Mason for kind of bringing this idea to light. He was reading a book that was actually in my office that I'm going to end this sermon with. And we got talking and he said, that'd be a good sermon, Dad. So I got to thinking about it and here we go. So you can be the judge of whether or not it was a good sermon or not. So we have all heard that saying that sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. We've all heard that. Kids say it around the playground. It's been around probably since the beginning of time. Is it true? Is it true? Certainly the sticks and stones piece, that could be true. Remember once I was playing golf with my buddy. We play with sticks called golf clubs. And he was doing a couple of practice swings and I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention, and I don't think he was either. And in the midst of his practice swings, apparently we kind of drifted closer together, and he did a back swing, and back of my head was right there. Man, did I see stars. My golf game wasn't great to begin with, but I was kind of walking crooked the rest of the round. So sticks certainly can hurt. I don't know if he jarred anything loose in there or not, probably what's wrong with me today, but sticks and stones can hurt. But how about words? How about names? Do they truly never hurt? A lot of people will say, because it kind of makes you feel better in the short term. But does it really hold true? That's the question. Brethren, gossip is a powerful form of speech. It is a form of speech, and it's very powerful. The purpose of it? Nothing positive. The purpose of gossip is truly to hurt others, to cause harm to others. That's why people gossip. They don't gossip because they want to make somebody look better. They gossip because they want them to have a negative light cast upon them. Now we know that God established the spoken word even before mankind was created. God demonstrated the power of words at the beginning of the Bible in the book of Genesis. We're going to turn to Genesis 1 here in just a minute. We're going to read a good portion of it. Again, the scriptures in Genesis 1, they're not new to us. But as we read through them, I want you to really focus upon the power of words. The power of words. And we're going to keep going back to that theme throughout the sermon, the power of words. Now, God didn't intend words to be a source of harm necessarily for us. He meant our words to encourage and to lift up others, not to bring us down. The first accounts of words being used to create positive outcomes, like I said, are seen in Genesis 1. So if you turn to Genesis 1, we'll start right in the very beginning. Verse 1. And again, we've all read this and have heard this many, many times. This is not new. But I want you to think about the power of God's words as we read through several verses here in Genesis. It says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters." And in verse 3, God said, here's the first account of speech in the Bible. Verse 3, "And God said, let there be light. And there was light." Dropping down to verse 6. "And God said, let there be a space between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the space and separated the water under the vault from the water above it. And it was so." The power of words. God said it, and it was so. But we know God didn't stop there in verse 9. Genesis 1, 9, "And God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear." How does it end? "And it was so." God spoke and it happened. The power of words. Verse 11, "Then God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds." And again, "It was so." Verse 14, "And God said, let there be lights in the vault of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years. And let them be lights in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth." You can finish the rest. "And it was so." Six powerful words. God said, "And it was so." The power of words. Dropping all the way down to verse 20. "And God said, let the water teem with living creatures, and let the birds fly above the earth across the vault of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the seas and every living thing with which the water teems and that moves about in it, according to their kinds. And God saw," what did he see? "That it was good." God spoke and it was good. Notice God said here that what he created with the power of his words was good. So the question I had, do what we create with our words, is it good? Now we know that only one is good, and that is God. So maybe I should ask that question a little bit differently. Is what we create with our words, does it cause harm to others? Do we create positive feelings with our words or negative? Brethren, if we are spreading or even participating in the act of gossip, we're participating in harming and negative feelings and thoughts and experiences for others. If we drop down to verse 22 in Genesis, verse 22, it said, "God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase the number and fill the water in the seas and let the birds increase on earth." Continuing on, verse 24, "And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock, the creatures that move along the ground, and the wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so." Verse 26, he again, "Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the seas and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created, in verse 27, so God created mankind in His own image. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female, He created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. And then finally, finishing up in verse 29 and 30, then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. And how does he end? And it was so. I never really read that this way before, thinking about it, the power of words. Look what God created by the power of his words. God established that words have power, and we know they have power. The creation might be perhaps maybe one of the most impressive use of words by God. But he kept speaking throughout the Bible. We sing that song, God speaks to us. If we look at Exodus 20, Mr. Bell talked about in Matthew 28 that we are to observe all things that God commanded of us. In Exodus 20, beginning in verse 1, God spoke to us again. What did he speak in Exodus 20? This is where we talk or hear or for the first time see the Ten Commandments. When God speaks, good things happen. When he spoke, he created the earth. He created us. He created everything that we see. Mr. Wheaton and I talked about the beautiful drive that we each had up on the way up today. If it wasn't for God creating all that vegetation, think about what that drive might look like. If God did not speak about the vegetation being created, what would that drive look like? Certainly wouldn't be as pretty, would it? In Exodus 20, verse 1, and God spoke all of these words. What did he say in verse 2? I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And then as we look at verse 3, this is where God gives us his commandments. And again, Mr. Bell told us in reading Matthew 28 that we are to observe all of these things. Why? Because of language. Because God spoke and said, you're going to do these things. Verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me. Verse 4, it says, you shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything else. We're not to have idols. Dropping down to verse 7, you shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God. Speech. Don't use God's name in vain. That's all speech. It's all language. For the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Verse 8, remember the Sabbath day. That's why we're here. In verse 12, honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land of the Lord your God is giving to you. We'll go back to that commandment in just a little bit. Verse 13, don't kill anyone. 14, don't commit adultery. Verse 15, don't steal. We'll talk about that in the story at the end. Verse 16, you shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. Don't lie about your neighbor. That'll kind of be a highlight throughout the sermon as well. And then finally in verse 17, we know we shall not covet. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. We know all of these verses to be the Ten Commandments. How did we get them? The spoken word. God spoke them to the Israelites. The fifth commandment tells us to honor our father and mother. The ninth commandment tells us not to bear false witness or lie. Again, God knew the power of words. He knew that gossip would cause great hardship for mankind. So much so that a couple of his commandments, if you read into them, really address gossip. It's not explicit, But how do you honor your mother and father if you're talking about somebody else? That doesn't look good for the family. If you're gossiping by nature, you are lying. That is the definition of gossip, telling lies basically to harm somebody else. So God knew that that would be a problem. Therefore, he told us, don't do it. And God said. If we read down further in Exodus 20, we can see that the people were afraid of God when he spoke to them. I have this sense in my head about what God's voice might sound like. I don't know. I mean, I anticipate a pretty powerful voice. But I don't know. It doesn't necessarily tell us. But we know that when God spoke, people listened. At least they should have. And we know the Israelites, when God spoke, they were afraid. They had fear because of the power of God's words. Listen to the power and the meaning in what Moses told the people when they asked God. See, the Israelites said, boy, please don't have God speak to us directly again. For they feared that if he did, that they were going to die. In Exodus 20, verse 20, Moses said to the people, again, the spoken word, the power of words, Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. See, they were afraid of God. They didn't want him to speak again. Do not be afraid. God has come to test you so that the fear of God will be with you. Why do we want the fear of God with us? Doesn't sound positive. Why do I want to be afraid all the time? Well, the reason we want the fear of God with us, it says right here, to keep you from sinning. It's not an unhealthy fear, it's a healthy fear. Nothing wrong with a healthy fear of authority. We lack that in society today. I can tell you that firsthand as a middle school principal. I have very few kids that truly had that healthy fear of authority, partly because of their parents. I yell at them, their parents yell at me. That's kind of how it works these days for the most part. And the kids know that. But God wants us to keep from sinning. Moses told the Israelites to fear the Lord so that you do not sin. Brethren, that's a powerful statement. Many of us sin today. We all sin today. God knew that. We learned about that as we went through the spring holy day. Sin is inevitable. Our goal is to try to do it less and less. The more and more we learn, the more and more we live this way of life, our goal is to sin a little bit less each year, each day, each month. But we know that many sin in this world because of the use of the words. It's human nature to gossip. It is easy to get sucked into. Very, very easy to get sucked into gossip. God knew that we would gossip, which is probably why those Ten Commandments were given. Again, not specifically talking about gossip, but you can't gossip if you follow the commandments that he gave us. Again, gossip by the definition is bearing false witness. No mother and father wants to hear that their kid's out there spreading rumors or spreading gossip about others, because the purpose is nothing positive. Brethren, we've all fallen victim to gossip in one way or another, either participating in it or being the victim of it. It's easy to participate in that rumor mill. That's why a lot of teachers, and when I taught, I tried not to eat in the faculty room. Nothing good comes out of the faculty room in a school. All they do is moan and groan and complain about people. Typically, the principal is the topic of that conversation, so I obviously can't go in there now, but when I was a teacher, how do I know that? Because that's what we did. Always complain about the leader, right? It's always the leader's fault. People don't take ownership. And if there is a morality issue, it is the leader's fault. It's our job to fix it. But it's easy to fall into that rumor mill. I had a staff member this week. And for fear of not gossiping, obviously I'm not going to use her name, but as the example, she was gossiping right in the front of the guidance office. My assistant principal heard it. And she was going on about an issue that she perceived happened in the building with a student. It was completely false. How do we know? Because we dealt with the student and we dealt with the teacher. We knew the issue. She may have walked by one of our doors, or maybe the kids told her something. People listen to others without having all of the facts. And when you start repeating those stories without all of the facts, you're gossiping. You're starting rumors. Her story was completely inaccurate. So my assistant actually called her on it because he heard it and said, do you want the real story or do you want to keep spreading lies around this building? Nothing good can come from that. She kind of hung her head and went into her office and apologized. I don't think she meant harm by what she was doing. In fact, I'm pretty sure she didn't mean any harm. That's how easy our words can cause harm for others. Now, what she was talking about put another teacher in a bad light. Teacher didn't do anything wrong. She didn't have all the facts. Teacher actually did exactly what she should have done. But if you listen to the gossip and the rumor, totally different story was spread around the building. So in this case, I don't think that the staff members, as I said, I don't think her intention was to cause harm on anybody. But oftentimes when you spread gossip, that is the purpose. A lot of people don't have very high self-esteem. They don't have very high thoughts about themselves. So how do I feel better about myself? I make the person next to me look worse than they are. So we talk about them. It's easy to do, especially when that person may have done wrong to you. It's easy to start that rumor. It's easy to talk about them. But are we supposed to do that? Obviously not. See, many often will gain confidence and perhaps an ego, going back to the book, an ego from making light of others' mistakes. Now, there's a difference between joking with friends. I mean, the boys and I, we make fun of each other all the time. We're family. We do that. We're not gossiping. We're not rumoring. We're having fun with each other. We all do dumb things. We have a list of silly words that we all say when we're trying to speak fast, and it just doesn't come out right. And we go back to that now and again, and we laugh at each other. Nothing wrong with that. This is different. Gossip is different. The purpose of gossip is to harm others, making yourself look good at the expense of others. Look at the presidential campaign, if you can stand it. I can't, but you want to talk about gossip and rumor mills. And I'm not going to mention any by name because then I would be doing the exact same thing. I initially scratched in my notes I was going to talk about one of the candidates, but I'd be a hypocrite. I'd be going against completely what I'm trying to portray today. But in general, if you look at that, a lot of gossip, a lot of rumors. And again, it's easy to fall into. If you're into this, get on Facebook or social media. All kinds of things there that may or may not be true. It's a nice forum to spread gossip, to spread rumors. I'm not part of it. Being the job that I have, I can't really be part of the social media piece. People misconstrue things, and it's just not good for a leader to, in my opinion, to be part of the Facebook. Now, there's certainly positive things. Good way to keep up with others, spread positive information, but it's also easy to get caught up in the rumors and the gossip. Oh, did you hear about this person? And now it's all over the world. It's very easy for that to take place. See, brethren, our spoken and written language is powerful. It can cause horrible outcomes for those that fall victim to that gossip. It's not for us to point out others' faults in a public light. Now, do we have a responsibility to address some things that we see that may or may not be positive with our neighbor or our brethren? Of course we do. But we don't do it in public. That's gossip. That's rumors. I'll often get phone calls from parents that are upset about their son or daughter that was corrected or called out in a public setting by a teacher. We shouldn't be doing that. You don't point out somebody's faults in front of somebody else. Correction and pointing out faults, it should always be done in private. It should never be subject to public conversation because, again, this creates gossip. People hear what they want to hear, and their perception isn't always the truth, and then they go and spread it. God's words, again, bring us a powerful statement regarding shedding lights on the faults of others in a public forum. James 4, verse 11. James 4, verse 11. It says, brothers and sisters, do not, pretty clear, brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister or judges them speaks against the law and judges it. In Matthew 18, similar line here. Matthew 18, verse 15. It tells us here that basically don't spread rumors and don't gossip. If you have an issue with your brother or sister, go to them. Speak face to face. Unfortunately, in my job, I have to do that a lot with the people that work under my direction. I don't call them out in a faculty meeting. I call them into my office, and we have that crucial conversation about, you know, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I need corrected. I don't then go send an email out to the entire staff. You know, so-and-so did this. That's not right. In Matthew 18, 15, it says this. Moreover, if your brother shall trespass against you, what do? Go and tell him his fault. Between you and him, here's the key word, alone. Not in a public setting. If he shall hear you, you have gained your brother. Most rational people have respect for that person that says, you know, here's what I'm seeing. I really need you to correct it. One-on-one. That same message in a public setting, you didn't gain a brother. You just pushed him away. So again, we don't gain friends by talking about them in a negative light. We don't set that proper example by participating in the gossip. In Proverbs 20, verse 19, again, God knew the power of words and the damage that false statements could cause. So God again spoke to us in Proverbs 20, verse 19, a gossip betrays a confidence. So avoid a man who talks too much. Well, that doesn't say avoid the storyteller or the person that likes to talk next to you that at church while we're eating. But don't keep company with the gossiper. That's what God is telling us here. And again, as you know, I am the middle school principal in the district my boys attend, and I will tell you that gossip consumes the vast majority of my day, my assistant principal's day, my counselor's day. Kids love to spread rumors. And again, I don't know that all of them are doing it for the purpose of causing harm to others. Hey, did you hear that so-and-so got called into the principal's office? They know. We call them over the loudspeaker. Not always because they're being in trouble. We call kids to the office all day long. Middle school kids forget everything. Lunches, bats, gloves, all constant revolving door. Parents bringing stuff into the office that their kids forget. So we make that very clear at the beginning. Just because you hear your name over the loudspeaker, good chance you're not in trouble. Actually, probably 9 times out of 10, you're not in trouble. Because how do I call kids to the office? I call to the room. Tell the teacher to send them to me. We don't want to embarrass students. But a lot of the time that we spend is dealing with that gossip that occurs in the hallways, in the classrooms, in the social media. Instagram, Vine, Snapchat, Facebook, text messaging. All of those apps, they go on and on. I can't even keep up with them all. I have to talk to my students all the time. All right, so what are you guys using now? So that I'm aware of it, so when I talk to parents, hey, you better check this app on your kid's phone. This is the way they are communicating. So God spoke a lot about the spoken word. It applies to the written word as well. A lot of our communication is no longer spoken. Thumbs. It's all the text messaging, all the typing on the computer. And we can't even type properly. You get a text message that says K. Okay, you can't find much shorter of a word. You can't put okay, K. So our kids can't even write anymore because of some of the social media stuff. And again, that's appropriate for text messaging, but you should see some of the writings of my middle school students. All the text slang is in there. We're losing the ability to communicate both verbally and written because of some of the social media stuff. So I always encourage my parents to check your kids' phones. Check their accounts. Oftentimes, they will be absolutely horrified by what they see on there. You should see some of the language that middle school kids are writing on text messaging and some of these social media sites. Brethren, God warned us about our tongues and the damage our speech can cause. Now, he didn't specifically say anything about Facebook. I haven't come across that in the Bible yet. I haven't seen anything about Snapchat or Vine in the Bible either. But our conduct is there. The Ten Commandments, don't bear false witness. God didn't have to say, don't say bad things on Facebook. It applies to all communication in all language. We are not to allow our words to harm others. I can tell you that it happens all the time. It happens all the time on social media. A lot of the stuff that we deal with doesn't occur face to face. It occurs electronically. Because I can guarantee you some of the stuff that students put in writing, they're not going to say that to your face. They just don't. I called a mother up yesterday. A kid had written something in his planner for the teacher to see. I won't repeat it here because it's not appropriate. It was vulgar, bad. And the mom said, "What did he say?" I said, "Well, I know you and I don't talk like that. You really want me to say it?" She said, "I need to know what he said." So I said, "All right, there's quotes here." I said, "I'm going to give you the language." And I told her what the language was, and she gasped. It was bad. It was bad. Brethren, God knows it's wrong for gossip. He knows that our language needs to be controlled. In Psalm 34, 12, in Psalm 34, verse 12, and then stay in Psalms because we're going to read two in a row here. It talks about our language. It talks about our tongue. 34:12 in the book of Psalms, it says, "Whoever of you loves life and desires to see many good days." Who in here doesn't want to have good days? We typically don't pray, "God, give me a bad day." We don't do that. We want good days. Well, what do we got to do if we want good days? Verse 13, "Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from telling lies." Psalm 39:1, just a few pages back probably. Psalm 39:1, "I said," again, the spoken language, "I said, I will watch my ways and keep my tongue from sin. I will put a muzzle on my mouth while in the presence of the wicked." Brethren, it's easy to get sucked into that negative speech. It's very easy. God tells us here, when we're in the presence of the wicked, which sometimes we have to be. We live in the world, not out of the world. So there are wicked around us. Put a muzzle on your mouth when we're there. Don't engage in that negative speech that those around us may be engaged in. Brethren, we need to teach each other and our children the power of their words. We need to teach them the importance of fearing the Lord and keeping His commandments. We have a program at the middle school. It's called Think. We tell students to think before they speak. We tell them to think before they write something down. Had this kid thought before he wrote that vulgarity in his planner, he wouldn't be sitting in in-school suspension all day on Monday. You can't write words like that to a teacher. It's not okay. There has to be consequences for that. And I always tell them, "Did you think before you did this?" Clearly the answer is no. Middle school kids struggle with that. They typically do not think before they do things. Part of it is physically, their brain's not capable of it at all times. But they stop and slow down and take that extra step and think before they speak and before they write. They would save themselves a lot of grief. Christ told us in John 13:34, I'm not going to turn there, but in John 13:34, Christ told us, "Have love for one another." Have love for one another. It's difficult to have love for our brother if we're gossiping and spreading rumors about him. Those two things don't mix. Christ knew how important love was that he told his disciples that, "I give you a new commandment." Lori and I were having this conversation last night. How many commandments are there? I never thought about this before. How many commandments are there? I'm going to ask you, some of you after services, to answer that question for me. We know there's 10 in Exodus 20, but here Christ said, "A new commandment I give you." I think that's a sermon somewhere. There's got to be meaning in there. I'm not smart enough to figure that out, so I'm going to rely on somebody else here to give that sermon. And what was the commandment? To have love for one another. It's not contradictory to the other Ten Commandments that God gave us in Exodus. It supports those other Ten Commandments. It's complementary to them. Brethren, we know that love is the key to living God's way of life. If you have love for one another, all of the negative things that we do, they wouldn't happen. Easier said than done, right? So going back to the Think, our Think program at the middle school, we announce it every day. 5 letters, 5 days a week. It works out beautifully. So each day of the week, we focus on one of those different letters. So when we tell students to think before they write or speak, we ask them to ask themselves these 5 questions. And the 5 questions are, is it what I'm about to say or write, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? And is it kind? T-H-I-N-K, think. True, helpful, inspiring, necessary, and kind. If the answer to any of those questions is no, should we be saying it? They still do, because they don't think. But you shouldn't be. If what you're about to write and say doesn't fit those 5 criteria, we shouldn't be saying or writing it. And again, I can't even remember, one of the UCG sites, there was a blog that I actually saw that think on there. It really comes from Proverbs. And I forgot to write actually which verse and book it came from, but it comes from the Bible. Probably shouldn't say that in public school. I'll get myself in trouble. But when students go against the Think program, they're going against God's expectations. Now, I can't, again, say that in a public school that, you know, you're not following God's way. I'd lose my job. We tell them you're going against the Raider way. Our mascot is the Horsehead's Blue Raiders, which we've had conversations about that. I'm not sure that a Raider is the proper mascot for a school. I'm not sure what that teaches. And we've kind of gone back and forth about that, but I guess it is what it is. So we have the Raider way, and we spin that to be a positive thing. We don't do anti-bullying or anti-harassment in our school. I don't believe in it. I don't believe in the anti-bullying days. Because that implies that, all right, on this day, you better behave. No, you better behave every day. So we have the Raider way. This is the way we do things at Horseheads Middle School. Not on special days, but every day. God doesn't have, well, He has special days, the holy days, but are those the only days that we are to follow His commandments? No. Every day is when we do it. Not just on the Sabbath, not just on the holy days. Brethren, words may be the most powerful tools that we have as human beings. God's words certainly hold great power and message for us. His message to us is really a message of love. It's through our words that we can express our love for our brother, or we can sin against God and His commandments. In James 3, verse 1, God talks about how we should use our words and how we should be careful about our tongue. If you take your tongue out, you can't talk. Ever had a swollen tongue? You talk funny. After Novocaine, you can't feel your tongue, you talk funny. Tongue really is the medium for speech. Obviously, our thoughts come first, but without the tongue, we don't have speech. And in James 3, God talks about the tongue. In verse 1, it says, "Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly." Brethren, we know how to behave. God expects more of us because of what we know. In verse 2, "We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check." Verse 3, "When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal." Or take ships as an example. "Although they are so large and driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder whenever the pilot wants to." In verse 5, "Likewise." So God is comparing our tongue, very small part of the body, to the rudder of a ship, or those bits that turn that large animal that we call a horse. Verse 5, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil living among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. Verse 7, all kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. Verse 9, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Finally, in verse 10, out of the same mouth comes praise and cursing. Here's the key to that whole section. My brothers and sisters. Notice that most of God's statements, the most powerful pieces, are just a couple of words. Praise and cursing come from the same mouth. Here's what he says at the end. This should not be. Don't do it. We shouldn't be cursing and praising from the same mouth. It's all a result of our tongue. Very small part of the body. Very powerful. God makes it clear that we are not to use our words in ways that can harm others. We're to love our brothers as ourselves. We are to refrain from bearing false witness. We are to think before we speak. So what I'd like to do is conclude this sermon with a story. Now, I debated back and forth whether or not I wanted to read this whole story. Mason convinced me that I should. He said, Dad, it's a good story. It's a children's book. It was actually given to me by my phys ed teacher, one of the two phys ed teachers in the building. Him and I kind of share books back and forth, and he said, I'm a little embarrassed to give you this book. It's a kid's book. He goes, I don't want you to think that's all I think that you can read and comprehend. I said, well, you'd probably be right, so it's probably right up my alley. So he gave me this children's book. He said, even though it's a kid's book, it really has a good lesson. See, now everybody in the building knows that I have this different religion. A lot of them can't figure out exactly what it is. Those that have asked know, but they just know that every fall I can't get hold of the principal for about 10 days because he's gone. And then in the spring he disappears again. And he always just tells us some religious observance. They say, I want to go to the islands for a religious observance too. I said, you can, but it comes with a price. There's things that you have to do in order to go there. So we joke about that, and he knows that I am religious, and he is too in a strange sort of way. I mean, he definitely has some beliefs, certainly not what we believe. But he's got a good moral rudder. He knows right from wrong. He tries to do what's right in his life and for kids. And if a kid has an issue, this teacher's going to take care of him. So he gives me this book, and he said, it teaches a good life lesson. So the name of the book is Mr. Peabody's Apples. It was written by Madonna, not the singer, I presume. But that's all that's on there, Madonna. Mr. Peabody's Apples by Madonna. So I'm going to read basically most of it. And this is where the pillow with all the feathers comes in. And it won't happen till the end. And as I read the story, I want you to think about the Ten Commandments, not bearing false witness. James, where we're not all to be teachers because we all can't take care of our tongues. We say things that we shouldn't say. Again, that's all of us. God knows that. Our job is to work towards saying and speaking the way that we're supposed to, being the light to the world. But I want you to think about those things. And I am going to have to change a couple of words in here to make it Sabbath appropriate, and I'll tell you when those pieces come in. So, the beginning. In the town of Hatville, in parentheses, wasn't a very big town, Mr. Peabody was congratulating his Little League team on a great game. This is probably why Mason liked the story, because it has to do with baseball. They had not won, but nobody really cared because they'd had such a good time playing. Hopefully the team last night that we played had a good time playing because they didn't win. We've scored how many? 85, 89 runs, I think, in the last two games against our opponents. Those are long games. Hopefully the boys that we completely crushed had fun. There's a disconnect in the way teams are chosen. You feel bad for the kids, but it is what it is. So Mr. Peabody was the history teacher at the local elementary school, and in the summertime he dedicated every, here's the word change, Sunday to organizing baseball games with other schools. The book says Saturday. So we're going to change it to Sunday. We don't play baseball on the Sabbath. Right, boys? Billy Little, who wasn't a very big boy, was one of Mr. Peabody's students. He loved baseball more than anything, and he thought Mr. Peabody was the greatest. After each game, he would always stay to help pick up the bats and the balls. And when they were finished, Mr. Peabody would smile and say, "Thanks, Billy. Good job. I'll see you next Sunday." Then he would start his walk home along the main street of Hatville, which wasn't a very big street, waving hello to everyone he knew, and everyone would wave hello back. Along the way, he also passed by Mr. Funkadelli's Fruit Market. Here, Mr. Peabody would stop and admire Mr. Funkadelli's fresh apples. He would pick out the shiniest apple, drop it into his bag, and continue on his way. That's a key piece of the story. Across the street, Tommy watched with curiosity as Mr. Peabody walked away with the apple. "That's strange," Tommy said to himself. "Mr. Peabody didn't pay anyone for the apple." Tommy got on his skateboard and rushed to tell his friends. The following Sunday, Mr. Peabody's team played another game, and they lost, as usual. But no one seemed to care because they had had such a good time playing. Billy picked up the balls and bats, and Mr. Peabody set off on his walk home. He waved to everyone he knew, and they waved back. Once again, he stopped outside of Mr. Funkadelli's Fruit Market, picked up the shiniest red apple he could find, dropped it in his bag, and continued along his way. Across the street, Tommy and his friends watched Mr. Peabody, and they were amazed at what they saw. Mr. Peabody had not paid for his apple. They couldn't wait to tell all of their friends, who told their parents, who told their neighbors, who told their friends in the town of Hatville, which wasn't a very big town. Here's where the gossip and the rumor mill started. If this were to happen today, you can bet this would also be on Facebook. It'd be on all the social media sites. Elementary history teacher steals apples. I can guarantee it'd be there. I was lucky enough to be on Facebook myself last Saturday. Got a parent that is not happy with me, spreading kinds of rumors about me in the district. It's part of the job. It is what it is. She doesn't have all the facts, because she can't have all the facts, because I can't tell her what I've done to other students. She's demanding the police and everybody else be involved in a case that simple conflict between two middle school boys. But I can't tell her that, so she won't have all the facts, and I'll continue to be on Facebook. Continuing with this story, the Sunday after that, Mr. Peabody was standing all alone on the baseball field wondering where everybody was. Then he saw Billy walking towards him. Billy had a sad look on his face. "Hello, Billy. I'm glad you're here. But where's the rest of the team?" Billy was silent. "What is it, Billy?" he asked. Billy wouldn't look up. "Everybody thinks you're a thief," he said to the ground, bearing false witness. Mr. Peabody looked confused. He took off his hat. He scratched his head. "Billy, who says I'm a thief? And what did I steal?" See, Mr. Peabody didn't know what was going on. Tommy and his friends said they saw you take an apple from Mr. Funkadelli's fruit market twice. And they said you didn't pay for them. "Ah," said Mr. Peabody, putting his hat back on his head. "Let's go and talk to Mr. Funkadelli about it, shall we?" They walked down the main street, which wasn't a very big street, and Mr. Peabody waved to all the people he knew. But now, some of them didn't wave back. Some pretended they didn't even see him. They pretended not to know him. They finally arrived at Mr. Funkadelli's fruit market. Brethren, at this point in the story, we see the power of our words. Everybody loved Mr. Peabody at the beginning of the story. Great elementary history teacher. Loved coach, even though he stunk. Never won a game, but they loved him. Somebody put some words out there. He's a thief. Based on what they saw him take an apple. See, the power of our words completely changed the perception that the folks in the town had over this once-loved baseball coach. Continuing on in the story, I'll pop Mr. Funkadelli, who said, "Hey, what are you doing here, Mr. Peabody? Why aren't you at the game?" "There wasn't a game today," said Mr. Peabody, "and I was wondering if I could take my apple earlier than usual." "Sure, why not?" replied Mr. Funkadelli. "You pay for them every Saturday morning." We'll say Sunday there too. "You pay for them every Sunday morning when you pick up your milk. You can take them whenever you'd like. You want the big shiny one, right, Mr. Peabody?" "I would like to take the apple, Mr. Peabody, but I have to go and find Tommy and explain it." Or, I missed the line. Mr. Peabody took his apple, smiled, and offered it to Billy. "I would like to take the apple, Mr. Peabody, but I have to go find Tommy and explain everything. When you find him, ask him to come over to my house. I would like to speak to him," replied Mr. Peabody. A little while later, Billy found Tommy and told him what had happened with the apples. He told Tommy that Mr. Peabody wanted to speak to him right away. So off Tommy ran, and when he arrived, he rang the doorbell and Mr. Peabody came to the door. They looked at each other just for a while. "Oh dear, Mr. Peabody," said Tommy on the doorstep, "I didn't understand. I should not have said what I said. But it looked like you hadn't paid for the apples." Mr. Peabody's eyebrows went up a little, and he felt a warm breeze blow across his face. "It doesn't matter what it looked like. What matters is the truth." Tommy looked down at his shoes and said, "I am so sorry. What can I do to make things better now?" Mr. Peabody took a deep breath, looked up at a small cloud that was in the sky and said, "I'll tell you what, Tommy. Meet me at the baseball diamond in an hour. And bring a pillow stuffed with feathers." Got that image in your mind from the beginning of the sermon? "Okay," said Tommy, who then ran off to his house to get a pillow. An hour later, Tommy met Mr. Peabody on the pitcher's mound. "Hello, Tommy," said Mr. Peabody. "Follow me and bring your pillow." Tommy followed Mr. Peabody to the top of the bleachers, wondering, "What is this all about?" "It's a windy day, isn't it?" asked Mr. Peabody when they reached the top. Tommy nodded in agreement. "Here's a pair of scissors. Now cut the pillow in half and shake the feathers out." Tommy looked confused, but did it anyway. He thought it was a small price to pay to gain Mr. Peabody's forgiveness. The wind carried the thousands of feathers far and wide. Tommy looked relieved and said, "Is that all I have to do to make things better?" "There's one more thing," said Mr. Peabody. "Now you must go and pick up all the feathers." Tommy frowned. "I don't think it's possible to pick up all the feathers," Tommy replied. "It would be just as impossible to undo the damage that you have done by spreading the rumor that I am a thief," said Mr. Peabody. "Each feather represents a person in Hapville." There was a long pause, and Tommy began to understand what Mr. Peabody was saying. Finally, he said, "I guess I have a lot of work ahead of me." Mr. Peabody smiled and said, "Indeed you do. Next time, don't be so quick to judge a person, and remember the power of your words." Then he handed Tommy the shiny red apple and made his way home. In conclusion, brethren, I'd like to turn to Psalms 2, verse 2. Psalm 2, verse 2. It says, "Everyone lies to their neighbor. They flatter with their lips, but harbor deception in their hearts." Here's the key. Verse 3. "May the Lord silence all flattering lips and every boastful tongue." Brethren, we need to ask God to help us control our tongues so that we are not left to pick up all the feathers.